So today we're continuing on with this subsection, which is establishing that the Puranas are Vedic, and text 15 is the last verse in that section. In fact, even before text 15 is finished, we will have completed that section. So let us read through then the translations of text 15. In fact, there are five parts to it, and the last part we have placed within the next subsection. So we're just reading part of text 15 here on page 18. The same picture is drawn, describing the Puranas in conjunction with the Vedas in the Vayavya Samhita of the Shiva Purana, which says, "The great master condensed the four Vedas and divided them into four parts. Because he separated the Vedas into parts, he is called Veda Vyas. He also condensed the Purana into 400,000 verses, although even today it contains 1 billion verses on the planets of the demigods. Was condensed, sankshiptam, here implies by him, Vyasadev, to complete the idea. 15.2. The names of Puranas like Skanda and Agni, however, pertain to the Purana's speakers in the same way as the names Kataka and so on, or else they pertain to the conventional order in which they were composed. Therefore, when we sometimes hear that the Puranas are not eternal, this is only in reference to their visible manifestation and disappearance. Thus we have proven in texts 13 to 15 part 2 that the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic." So he says that, and then he continues to sort of drive the point home even more in 15.3 and 15.4. So 15.3. "That persons like Suta Goswami had the privilege to speak the Itihasas and Puranas follows the pattern of the qualification for chanting the name Sri Krishna, which is the perfect fruit of the kripa of the entire Vedic Shruti. As the Prabhaskanda states, this name Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet, the most auspicious of all auspicious things. It is the perfect fruit of the kripa of the entire Vedic Shruti. In essence, it is pure living spirit. O best of the Bhrigus, any human being who just chants this name even once, whether with faith or neglectfully, will become liberated. And, 15.4, and as the Vishnu Dharma also states, one is considered to have studied the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda, who has uttered the two syllables Hari. The Vishnu Purana, furthermore, states that the Itihasas and Puranas explain definitively the meaning of the Vedas in such verses as, on the pretext of writing the Mahabharata, Srila Vyas has revealed the Vedas' meaning. Without doubt, all the Vedas are given a firm foundation in the Puranas." And in the commentary there, we've just put one point dealing with some problems regarding the names of some Vedic literatures. Actually, there's one or two other points we'll mention, but that was the main point that struck us at the time. So here we have in 15.1, the point is being made very clearly. This is Shiva Purana being quoted, that Vyas divided the Veda into four, Therefore, he's called Veda Vyas. Vyas, as we said the other day, means divider. And he also condensed the Purana into 400,000 verses, even though still today amongst the demigods, they have a version which is 1 billion verses. And then Jiva Goswami explains that this term sankshiptam means was condensed. And that means it was condensed by him, by Vyas. So his work is, there are two jobs he performs, really. One is Vyas, he divides, and the other is sankshiptam. Sankship means he condenses. So he divided the Veda into the four Vedas, and he condensed the Purana from 1 billion verses down to 400,000. He condensed, we mentioned the other day, the Mahabharata from 60 million verses down to a mere 100 or 110,000. So it's now the longest poem existing on this planet. So, these are the activities of Vyas. And it's becoming more and more clear, and basically it's already clear, really, that the Puranas and the Itihasas, they're definitely Vedic. So statements which the Puranas make, or which Mahabharata or Ramayana might make, about how they are all Vedic and how they all manifested in their current forms in the course of Vyas doing his work, then this can all be taken very easily as being authoritative. So now in 15.2 comes up the point which we've mentioned there in the commentary about some problems regarding the names of some of these Vedic literatures. In fact, we did mention right at the end of the class on Friday how there is one Upanishad called the Katha Upanishad. Probably you've heard about it, or heard of it, because Srila Prabhupada, in his purports, he does refer to it from time to time. So this is a well-known Upanishad, and this Upanishad is spoken by a sage, or taught at least by, it's named after a sage who teaches it, who's called Katha Muni. And he teaches it to his disciples. They're called the Katakas. So therefore some people think that such a literature is not part of the original Vedic scriptures. But this is just some later work by this person called Katha. And there are a number of others. For example, the Ramayan. We know of Ramayan by the name Valmiki Ramayan. And we mentioned that actually, didn't we, on Friday, how Valmiki, he was preached to by Narada Muni, changed his life altogether, went into that state of trance, and then realized the Ramayana as we know it today before Lord Ram appeared. So therefore some people would say that this is just Valmiki's work and it is not part of that original text which was given at the time of creation. But here in 15.2, Srila Jiva Goswami says that therefore when we sometimes hear that the Purana, or therefore we sometimes hear the Puranas are not eternal, but we should understand that this is only in reference to their visible manifestation and disappearance. I mentioned also on Friday about the Taittiriya Upanishad. And that's quite an interesting story. When Vyas was doing his work of dividing the four Vedas to start off with, then he gave each of the four Vedas, one each, to four of his disciples. And in the case of the Yajur Veda, In the case of the Yajurveda, he gave that to Vaishampayana, who's also a fairly famous person in the Vedic tradition. So Vaishampayana, he was teaching this Yajurveda. Actually, he wasn't really teaching it, but he was working on dividing it up nicely and putting it into the relevant sections with the help of his disciples, one of who was Yajnavalkya, another quite famous name in the Vedic tradition. So there was this group of disciples, including Yajnavalkya, working on dividing up the Yajurveda into like further subdivisions. And they're all working hard, but they weren't making a lot of progress. But then Yajnavalkya, he got a little fired up. So he told Vaishampayana that, look, I'll just do this. All these other disciples of yours, they can't get it together. But me, just give me the job. I'll get it together, the whole thing. So Vaishampayana kicked him out. He rejected him. He said, you're too puffed up. You're disqualified. So you get out. He said, not only do you get out, but you give me back all the knowledge which I gave you. Which means whatever parts of the Yajurveda Yajnavalkya had been working on in the meantime. So Yajnavalkya then vomited up all his knowledge. Then the other disciples, they were very hungry for knowledge. So they wanted to consume that knowledge. But humans normally don't eat vomit. So they transformed themselves into partridges, actually. Just one type of bird, if you know what a partridge is like. Kind of omnivorous type of bird. And these partridges, the disciples in the form of partridges, they then ate up that vomited knowledge. And the Sanskrit word for partridge is taittiriya, or taittira, something like that. So that became known, that knowledge became known as the Taittiriya Upanishad. So, you know, that's an interesting example, isn't it? Then Yajnavalkya, he felt he had been treated unfairly. So he went away and he decided, I'm going to surpass my guru because he has treated me unfairly and embarrassed me and kicked me out and everything. So I'm gonna show him. So he prayed to the sun god. He prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the sun god, Surya Narayan, to get more Yajurveda knowledge. So this is all going on the human level. And the knowledge has already been reduced somewhat by Vyas before handing it to his disciples. Yeah. So, Yajnavalkya then prayed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the sun god for more of the Yajurveda. Because there is more, like in the planets of the demigods. So that was revealed to him by the sun god. However, the sun god assumed the form of a horse and spoke that knowledge through the hairs of his mane, the hair running down the back of his neck. How does that sound? So that is now called the Vajrasaneya Samhita, Vajrasaneyi Samhita, which means that Samhita which came from the hairs of the horse's mane. So in cases like these, we've mentioned a few, then people, you wouldn't blame them really for thinking that these are just modern compositions and they may not be from that original text which was given way back at the time of creation to Lord Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Jiva Goswami's explanation is that it is, but the thing is, different things happen actually. There are a number of possibilities. One possibility is that some knowledge gets lost. This was the case with the Ramayana. But then it was re-revealed through Valmiki. And in fact, this happens every day of Brahma. This Katha Upanishad, this sage Katha Muni is famous for speaking it and teaching it. So Katha Muni is not exactly a name, it's a post. Or even if it is a name, then every day of Brahma, there is a person who appears by the arrangement of the Lord with that name. And the same thing happens. You get the idea? So it's just a matter of whether they're visibly manifest or whether they have disappeared, now they're re-manifesting, or it may be a matter of who is the person who traditionally teaches it or who traditionally speaks it. In some cases, the name, like when it comes to the many of the Puranas, then the particular Purana is in many cases, not all but many, dedicated to the person who it is named after. So, you know, the Bhagavat Purana, for that matter, Srimad Bhagavatam, is named after Krishna. And people could say, well, Krishna, he just appeared 5,000 years ago. And then Vyas wrote it. Vyas even says he wrote it. So it's just a more modern work like that. But the thing is that it is eternal, but when Krishna appears, then it manifests again in a very clear form like that, having become a little kind of unclear in the past. How that happens, we're going to talk about also. One incident of how Vedic knowledge, when Vedic knowledge was lost. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He edited. He's like the editor. Yeah. They take it as Vedic, but they think that the four Vedas were already existing, but the Puranas were composed then. Yeah, because apparently they were. Suta Goswami spoke them all, and Vyas was present. So they take it like that, in most cases. Yeah, there are different schools of thought amongst them, but that's the main school of thought. So, like this, Jiva Goswami explains then how it is that sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes, you come across different literatures which people like us, we would count as Vedic literatures, part of the body of literatures which the four Vedas are part of. So, people come across these other literatures which we accept, but they think that, you know, these are more recent compositions. Actually, they're not. They're actually all given. All of them. The Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Srimad Bhagavatam. All of them. They're all given at the time of creation by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But sometimes some become lost and others don't. And, you know, there are different things which happen like that. And but in every Dwarpara Yuga, there is a Vyas. And he then rearranges everything for the Kali Yuga, to be suitable for the Kali Yuga, particularly, to make things clear. So these things then are discussed here in 15.2. And Jiva Goswami does say that thus we have proven in texts 13 to 15.2 that the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic. Of course, he does continue more or less addressing the same point a little further in 15.3 and 15.4. 15.3 and 15.4 we didn't refer to in the commentary. We should have, really. It's an interesting point. In his Sarvasamvadini commentary, Jiva Goswami says that in these two parts here, he is anticipating an objection, although the objection is not stated. The objection is that if the Itihasas and Puranas are Vedic, are as Vedic as the four Vedas, then how come they were spoken in recent times by a non-Brahman? Because in a very traditional sense, the Vedic literatures are not meant to be studied even by non-Brahmins. So here we have Suta Goswami spoke all the Puranas, every single one of them. But he is not a Brahman. So, this objection, though, overlooks the fact that the Itihasas and Puranas, that there are certain parts, certain things within the Vedic literatures in that broad sense, which are not restricted to the Brahmins. And there are statements in the Vedas which make it clear that there are certain parts of the Vedic literatures which are not restricted to the Brahmins. So here he gives two examples. First, in 15.3, he quotes, I think it is the Skanda Purana. Skanda Purana. Actually, I'm not sure which I know of. Does it say Skanda Purana? Okay. So in the Skanda Purana then, Prabhas Skanda, it says, this name Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet, the most auspicious of all auspicious things. It is the perfect fruit of the creeper of the entire Vedic Shruti. So it is the fruit of the four Vedas, in other words, the Shruti. In this context means the four Vedas in their immediate corollaries, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. So that name Krishna, it appears in different places in the Vedic literatures. But it is such a thing that the Skanda Purana says, O best of the Bhrigus, any human being, not just the Brahmins, any human being who just chants this name once, even if they're faithful or neglectful, or doesn't even matter about their attitude, but they'll become liberated. So, this name Krishna, the Puranas have the same characteristic as the name Krishna. They're very merciful. Even though they're very exalted, the name Krishna is so exalted here that it's called the perfect fruit of the creeper of the Shruti, of the four Vedas. That's how exalted it is. But anyone can chant it, any human being. And even if they don't chant it nicely, they'll be liberated. So, by Vyasadeva handing over the Puranas to Suta Goswami, he was just demonstrating this point, that the Puranas and Itihasas, it's not limited. They're not limited. Just like the name Krishna is not limited. Even though the name Krishna is Vedic, and even though the Puranas are Vedic, but still they are part of that part of the Vedic literatures which are approachable by anyone. And the same point is made in 15.4. From the Vishnu Dharamottara Upanishad, which is Purana, it's one of the Upapuranas. In fact, you'll find it referred to here and there in Prabhupada's books, Vishnu Dharamottara Purana. But it's Upapurana. It's one of the secondary Puranas, not one of the 18 main Puranas. So it says that anyone who has chanted the two syllables Hari, we can consider they've studied all four of the Vedas. So anyone, any fool, perhaps, could say Hari. Any person could say Hari. And if they do that, if they're chanting the holy names of the Lord, then you understand. They've been through all the four Vedas. Doesn't matter what they may seem to be now. You know, there's also that verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, I think it's the fourth canto. What is that one about the dog eaters? Huh? Swapacha. What? How does that one? Oh, can't remember. Yeah, there's one verse there about how even if you find a dog eater chanting the holy name of the Lord, even if he's a dog eater, you can understand he's already studied all the Vedas, visited all the holy places, performed all the sacrifices. You can know that. What is the evidence that he's already done all those things? That he's just regularly chanting the holy names of the Lord. So like that, the Puranas, there are parts of the Vedic literatures, the four Vedas, of course, even nowadays, they should only be studied by the Vedas, by the Brahmins. Of course, there's hardly any point in anyone trying to study the four Vedas now, as we discussed the other day. But even if someone was going to try, they should be Brahmins, really Pakka Brahmins. But the other parts of the Vedic literatures, Stri Sudra, Dwija Bandhunam, they're open to everyone. And just like the holy name of Krishna is so sweet and wonderful, and the fruit of the Shruti, so the Puranas have the same characteristic. In other words, what we're getting onto here, what we're beginning to get into now, is what is the next point, which is that the Puranas, not only are they Vedic, but they're actually better than the four Vedas. They're better than the four Vedas. So let us go on now to the next subsection on page 20. That the Puranas have special importance because of their compiler, Vyas. 15.5. Even though we understand that the Itihasas and Puranas are just two types of Shastra, among many which elucidate the meaning of the Vedas, still these two are special on account of the special status of their promulgator. As stated in the Padma Purana, even Brahma and other demigods do not know everything Dwaipayana Vyas knows. He understands everything known to anyone else, but some things he knows no one else can comprehend. And verse 16, part 1, the Skanda Purana says, these others, means the other Vedic scholars, these others make use of small collections of ideas they have carved out from the infinite sky of Vyasadeva's mind. They take advantage of these borrowed ideas, like people who pick up things discarded from someone else's house. In the same vein as the statement of Parashara Muni in Sri Vishnu Purana, then during the period of the 28th Manu, The great master, my son, Vyas, divided the one Veda with four divisions into four separate books. In the same way as he, the brilliant editor of the Vedas, arranged their entire text into various books, so have other Vyasas in the past, including myself. O best of Brahmins, you can understand that thus, in each of the rotations of the cycle of four ages, a different Vyas organizes the branches of the Vedas. But know that Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas is the Supreme Lord Narayan himself. Who else on this earth, Maitreya, could be the author of the Mahabharata? And the last part in this subsection is 16.2. In the Skanda Purana, we read, knowledge in this world was originally generated from Lord Narayan. In the Krita Yuga, it remained intact. In Treta Yuga, it became somewhat corrupt. And in Dwapara Yuga, altogether so. When knowledge had thus gradually transformed into ignorance because of Gautama Rishi's curse, the confused demigods, headed by Brahma and Rudra, went to ask protection from Narayan, the faultless provider of shelter. Informed of what they needed him to do, he, the personality of Godhead and greatest of mystics, descended to earth as the son of Parashara in the womb of Satyavati. In that form, Lord Hari himself restored the neglected Vedas. So the commentary there, there are two points: that Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas is special amongst those who have occupied the post of Vyas because he is directly Narayan. Skanda Purana says Sakshad Narayan. And secondly, well, I have to explain to you Gautama's curse, which led to the appearance of Vyas and also of Krishna. So there's some interesting points here. That this is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 6th chapter of the 12th canto. It explains there the story I just told you about the Taittiriya Upanishad is explained there, and this one about Yajnavalkya, and that other parts of the Yajurveda, which are not generally known amongst the human society, being revealed to him. So also in the same chapter, the point is made that this Vyas, Krishna Dwaipayana, he is a partial plenary portion of the Supreme Lord. He's described as being a small incarnation. Sometimes Prabhupada referred to him as Shakchavesh. There are at least two or three places where I've seen Srila Prabhupada refers to him as Shakchavesh. But that's all right, because Shakchavesh can also be applied to Vishnu Tattva. It's not only restricted to Jiva Tattva, although more often than not, the term, I think much more often than not really, in my experience, the term is used for empowered Jiva Tattva. But there can be also empowered Vishnu Tattva. And Anantashesh, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anantashesh is described as being Shakchavesh, and he's definitely not Jiva Tattva. So, this Vyas, Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas, he is special amongst all the Vyasas, because he is directly the Lord. Parashara says that I was a Vyas. That was not actually in the previous cycle. It was the one before, the 26th cycle. Parashara was the Vyas. Now we're in the 28th cycle, as was stated here in one of these verses. So this Krishna Dwaipayana, he's very special. Now, of course, he divided up all the Vedic literatures. It wasn't that he only worked on the Puranas. He worked on all of them. But the point here is, he gave more attention to the Puranas and Itihasas. That is also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Vyas himself condensed the Purana. He then handed it over to Suta, but Suta did not do a lot other than speak it. So therefore Jiva Goswami says here in 15.5 that the Puranas and Itihasas, they have special importance because of their promulgator. The person who got them together and presented them. In other words, his hand is much more prominent in the Itihasas and Puranas than it is in the other, in the four Vedas. Just imagine, you know, condensing something down from 1 billion verses to 400,000 and making sure you get the essence, you don't miss any points, and it's all just the very cream of that 1 billion. That's a big job. It's a very big job. And Mahabharata, from 60 million verses to 100,000 or so, very big job. All done personally by Vyas himself. So, therefore the Puranas and Itihasas, they have special importance because of him, because of his input. And then in... So that those points are covered in 15.5 and 16.1. You know, you get these statements like, even Brahma and the other demigods don't know what Vyas does, or what he knows, because he's Narayan. He's considered so knowledgeable that people have taken things, it says here, out of the sky of his mind. Now, of course, it appears that the point here is that sound moves through sky, through ether. And it doesn't move through anything else, actually. Sound moves through ether. So all sound is in the sky. That means all knowledge is there, in a sense. So in other words, what he's saying, the Skanda Purana is saying, is that all knowledge is in Vyasa's mind. And anyone who appears to have some knowledge of their own, they've just taken it out of his mind, actually. So Vyas is really like the supreme authority. And then we go on to 16.2. There it mentions Gotama's curse. This is an interesting story. This is told in the Vamana Purana. And our acharyas like Baladeva Vijibhushan, in his commentary on Tattvasandarbha, he tells the whole story of how there was a famine in the universe, but Gotama Rishi, he performed great austerities. He was given a benediction by Lord Brahma that he would be able to produce food, so he did. Then he invited all the Brahmins in human society to his ashram, and they were able to live there through the famine, eating food very nicely, because he had this special benediction from Lord Brahma. However, the famine ended after a while, and all the Brahmins wanted to go home, but Gotama insisted, no, you must stay a little longer. This is not uncommon in Vedic society. And a little longer normally means a month or two. Just like when Queen Kunti offered her prayers to Krishna in the 8th chapter of the 1st canto, he stayed on for another month or 2 months or something. She was basically asking him, please stay on longer. So the same thing happened. And then a little later they said, well, you know, we want to go home now. The famine was over. Famine's over, we want to go home. He said, no, no, stay a little longer. This happened several times. In the end, it was getting too much for them. So they made a plan. They tricked Gotama. They made a calf out of straw and put it by the path that he would walk down to take bath in the river or lake early in the morning. So he walked down the next morning. It was still dark. He kicked the calf. And then those Brahmins came and said, oh, you killed a calf. We cannot stay with you. We're going. You're a cow killer. So they all left. And Gotama was thinking, what, me, a cow killer? That's not possible. So he searched and he found the calf made of straw. And he realized what had happened. So he cursed the Brahminical order that you lose your knowledge. So they lost their ability to understand the Vedas. The Brahminical order became fallen. And this is one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, why, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says he comes in order to reestablish dharma. Dharma samstapanataya. He again in the form of Vyas, they had to appear to re-establish the Vedic literatures, to re-establish the disciplic succession, the whole Vedic institution, because the Brahmins became bewildered. So then Vyas took the Vedic literatures and then he did his work, because the Brahmins were just not capable of understanding. Yeah. So that is described then in 16:2. It was so bad that the demigods went and prayed to Lord Narayan that you have to incarnate to reestablish the Vedic knowledge and the Brahminical order like this. So therefore, he appeared himself as Vyas in this case. Of course, there was the situation with Kamsa and company, sort of like the political situation. So Krishna came himself to deal with that. So let us go on now and try and do this next little section. It's very short. Subsection D. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it was just at the end. He's... Yeah, just some time, like a couple of generations before. Two generations. Yeah. He's like the age of their grandfather. He's the father of their father. He's the father of Pandu. Okay, let's read these two little sections here. Two little texts. So this is now, we're now really going to get into the subject of how the Puranas are more important even than the Vedas. Not only are they Vedic, so you could say they're on the same level as the four Vedas, but actually they're more important than the four Vedas. Bear in mind that the point we're going to come to very soon is that Srimad Bhagavatam, even out of the Puranas, is the best, and therefore it is the ultimate source of knowledge completely. Yeah. So we're gradually, step by step, coming to that point. And the next step is that the Puranas are more important than the Vedas. So 16:3. The word Veda in this context also implies the Puranas and Itihasas. He is referring here to the very last sentence in 16:2 at the top of the page there, that in the form of Vyas, Lord Hari himself restored the neglected Vedas and the neglected Puranas and Itihasas. Thus we have established that the best way to proceed is to examine the Itihasas and Puranas, We've established that, right? Because we've lost so much of the Vedas that they're basically, it's impractical to try and use them. And the Puranas are at the very least on the same level. At the very least. So it has been established then that the best way to proceed to understand this Apaurusheya Shabda, this transcendental authoritative knowledge, is to examine the Itihasas and Puranas. However, he says, even among these two, moreover, there is evidence that the Puranas are more important than the Itihasas. As stated in the Narada Purana, that's the Brihan Naradiya Purana. O lovely one, this is Lord Shiva actually speaking to Parvati. O lovely one, I consider the message of the Puranas more important than that of the Vedas. Without doubt, all the Vedas are given a firm foundation in the Puranas. Anyone who disrespects the Puranas will have to take his next birth as an animal. So watch out, all those people who think like that. Even if he's very self-controlled and peaceful, he will achieve no good destination. And 17, part 1. And in the Prabhas Kanda of the Skanda Purana, we find the statement, O best of Brahmins, I consider the purport of the Puranas as unquestionable as the Vedas themselves. Without doubt, all the Vedas are given a firm foundation in the Puranas. Sometime in the past, the Vedas became afraid that these people are going to distort my meaning because they're inadequately trained in proper hearing. But at that time, the Itihasas and Puranas came forward to give the Vedas an unquestionable foundation. What cannot be found in the Vedas, O Brahmanas, is found in the Smritis. And what cannot be located in either is clearly described in the Puranas. O Brahmins, one who knows the Vedas along with their supplements and the Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not really learned. So the Puranas are even more important than the Vedas. You can see Lord Shiva is speaking there. He's a great authority. And he says that these people who think that the Puranas are not authoritative, not only do they not understand properly, but they're actually degraded. You know, this is such a heavy statement to make about traditional Brahmins, Vedic Brahmins, to say they're animals. So Lord Shiva, he really means what he's saying. He's really trying to make a point in an extremely strong way. Then in 17.1, it's interesting. First of all, the speaker says that I consider the purport of the Puranas to be as good as that of the Vedas. But then he goes on, takes the point further, that the Vedas have a foundation in the Puranas. Now, what does that imply? You know, if something doesn't have a foundation and you try to build on it, then whatever you try to build without a foundation will collapse. In other words, you have to have the Puranas. You need the Puranas. You cannot just study the Vedas. The Vedas are dependent on the Puranas. But we haven't seen any statements that the Puranas are dependent on the Vedas. Then, this is a nice point. Sometime in the past, the Vedas became afraid that these people are going to distort my meaning. So who are these people? They're the Vedic Brahmins. Because in those days, no one else had access to the Vedas. So the Vedas saw that in due course of time, these people, the Brahmins, are going to become degraded. And we see that today. If you meet, you know, a lot of these traditional caste-conscious Brahmins, sure, it's bad. Very arrogant, puffed up, don't accept Krishna, so they're kind of atheistic, really. So the Vedas became frightened that these people are going to distort my meaning. So then the Itihasas and Puranas came forward and said, don't worry, we'll protect you. In effect, that's what it means. That the Itihasas and Puranas, they could see that they were stronger. They could see that they were stronger. So they said, don't worry, we'll support you. Then another point, taking it even further. What cannot be found in the Vedas? In other words, from the outset, we should know that you cannot find all knowledge, even at the best of times, in the Vedas. You have to study the Smriti. We wrote on the board the other day the divisions of Shruti and Smriti. So there are different sections in the Smriti. The Itihasas are one section, the Puranas are another. There are other sections also. So not all knowledge is in the Vedas. So certain things, if you can't find them in the Vedas, just look in the Smriti and you'll find it there. But some things that you cannot find in the Vedas, and you also cannot find in the Smriti, not including the Puranas, of course, you haven't looked there yet, but it's clearly described in the Puranas. So therefore he concludes by saying that one who knows the Vedas, along with all their various parts, including the Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not really learned. So these are very powerful verses, which are leading us towards the point, or they're confirming strongly, how the Puranas are not only Vedic, but they're the best of all the Vedic literatures. They are the most essential of all the Vedic literatures. Yeah. And everything else that you can call Vedic is dependent, actually, on the Puranas. See, there are Smriti Shastras, which are rules and regulations. Sometimes the term Smriti is used in a very broad sense to include the Puranas and Itihasas. But in this context, because in the next sentence, or later in the same sentence, it is saying that if you can't find something in Smriti, you can find it in the Puranas, then the term Smriti is obviously being used in a narrower sense. The Smriti Shastras, they're like the Dharma Shastras, the Artha Shastras, and there are actually some scriptures which are called the Smriti Shastras. They're rules and regulations for sacrifice, for, you know, it's like Ayurveda is material science, different types of descriptive shastras explaining how to live, how to order one's life, how to balance one's life, like that. Yeah, so they are sometimes referred to as the Smriti. That's okay, because we've already shown, it's already done. Yeah, that's already done. Yes. He said at the end of 15:2, we have now established our point. So he's not going to just go on and on. But he does from time to time quote Shruti. He does, definitely, yeah. But then it's just as another evidence, really. Rather than, okay, here we have, you know, the most authoritative word It just becomes another type of evidence from this point on, the surety. Yeah. Well, it means that, you know, you can understand the Vedas. You can only understand the Vedas, really, by understanding the Puranas. Yeah. If you don't understand the Puranas, which means, you know, ultimately understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then if you read the four Vedas and the Upanishads and so on, you're going to have an awfully hard time understanding that they're actually pointing you towards Krishna. But they are. So, you know, you have to. But that only becomes clear in the Puranas. Yeah. In the four Vedas and Upanishads and so on, it's not so clear. At all, it's not so clear. Little mention here and there. So it's like that. That's right. Well, see, Mahabharata is specifically to do with Krishna and the Pandavas. Yeah. So, you know, we would certainly understand that going back in time, like at the beginning, the Mahabharata was there. But at some point, of course, we don't know where exactly, it became kind of lost. Yeah. So, Vyasa's hand in Mahabharata is very clear. You know, his input in Mahabharata is very, very clear. So here he's called not just the editor, but the author. Now, it's not exactly that he's the author, but his input is very great in the Mahabharata. 12.1. Uh-huh. You could add the Vedas and Vedanta Sutra. Sorry? Yeah, but the implication is that we mentioned it the other day, it's there in Sarva Samvadini, that if we say, okay, we can't understand the Vedas because a lot of it's lost, but we have Vedanta Sutra, which is the Veda Anta. It's the conclusion of the Vedas. So maybe we could just use that then. And then we'd be able to understand the Vedas. But the problem there is that there are commentaries or there is disagreement on the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. There are commentaries, like Shankaracharya. You know, Ramanujacharya, he did his Sri Bhasya, then Baladeva Vijabhushan, but then Shankaracharya did his. So it's more really meaning on Vedanta Sutra, actually. Then there's that also. There's all sorts of people like that, yeah. Yeah. Who worked on the Vedas and tried to explain the Vedas. And, you know, even I think it's Jaimini. He just imagines certain things. He says it must be like this. There's certain parts, I don't know even what exactly he was involved in, but there are certain parts existing which only took you to a certain point in his process. So he then just imagined some other parts. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu? Because he's Surya Narayan. He's an empowered expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, I see. Well, maybe he wasn't so puffed up. You know, Vaishampayana is a bit of a case himself. And Yajnavalkya felt, you know, that he had, you know, like good reason to feel upset that he shouldn't have been kicked out. Yeah. Vaishampayana, his disciples are called something like the Chakrahas or the Charakas. The Charakas, I think it is, means those who delivered their guru from the sin of killing a Brahmin. Somehow Vaishampayana killed a Brahmin, so his disciples did austerities to deliver him from that. Anyway, it appears, you know, Yajnavalkya, it appears that he wasn't so much in the wrong, and therefore the sun god was prepared to give him that knowledge. You know, maybe, see, this is not addressed here directly, but, you know, I mean, it's obviously the case that the Supreme Lord was prepared to give him the knowledge, and Vyas did not take the Yajurveda away from Vaishampayana either. So maybe it was some transcendental misunderstanding or something like that. Right. Right, yeah. Right. I think we should finish here because it's 5 o'clock. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.